Hey, it's Kyle Meredith, host of the Kyle Meredith With podcast, presented by WFPK at WFPK.org and the Consequence Podcast Network. It's a series that puts the spotlight on iconic musicians and actors, inviting them to drop by and talk about their latest projects, whether it's albums, TV shows, films, or beyond.
I'm going to say something I don't want to say. Here it goes. Without Spinal Tap, there is no Tenacious D.
Whoa. Man.
We get great stories and the biggest scoops from people like Garbage's Shirley Manson, the 1975's Matty Healy, Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D, Maya Hawke, Kiefer Sutherland, and everyone in between. New episodes arrive every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can find Kyle Meredith With on the Consequence Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Nancy Wilson of Heart, and I'm giving you the story behind the song on Consequence.
Welcome, listeners, to the story behind the song. I'm your host, Peter Chotti of Deep Cuts Media. Heart is one of the most iconic and impactful rock and roll supergroups of all time. The fact that the band was fronted by the powerhouse female sister duo Nancy and Ann Wilson was always interesting, but that wasn't the point. Straight out rock and roll always was, with hit after hit, including Barracuda, Magic Man, What About Love, Never, and so many, many more. But it was Crazy on You that really kicked things off in 1975 as the lead single on Heart's debut album, Dreamboat Annie. And what's crazy on me is that the song will celebrate its 50th anniversary next year. It's one of Heart's signature songs, and we still hear it everywhere. And it still also packs a punch with the power of its dystopian lyrics that resonate as much today in these fractured times as they did when Ann Wilson first wrote them in the tumultuous times of the early 1970s. In this month's episode, just in time for Heart's new tour that is just kicking off, I interviewed Nancy Wilson about Crazy on You and the band's overall journey. So take a listen as we dive deep into the story behind Heart's signature song, Crazy on You. I remember like exactly where I was when I first heard Magic Man. 1975, I was in the basement of one of my friend's houses. He had a little jukebox, and we were listening to it over and over and over
again. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I remember. I really can picture that. It's one of the few things, like a music experience that I picture.
It was like, back in the year of our Lord, 1975.
75. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The album first came out.
Yeah.
I remember me and Ann were in the car the first time we heard it on the radio.
Yeah.
On the car radio. And it was like, pull over, you know, like, and we had to pull over and freak out. And it was kind of like in that movie called That Thing You Do, that Tom Hanks did about the rock band, and they hear themselves for the first time on the radio, and everybody's running and turning up their radios at home. And it was like that. It was really extra exciting and life altering. It's like, if you hear yourself on the radio once, you know, like without calling in and requesting yourself, which we did a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the beginning, we would, you know, do fake accents and like, oh, yes, a friend of mine is in a rock band called Heart, and we'd love to hear the song. Yes,
exactly. Exactly.
Would you mind playing that for us? This is our request, you know. And then we had like different accents and everything, but, when they actually played it on their own volition, it was like, whoa, it was the best feeling ever.
I bet. You know, it's so you can picture when that happened.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We were riding in Vancouver on leaving the grocery store on the way back home.
Yeah.
With groceries in the back. And it was a red Impala that my mom gave Ann, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which we called the Astro Plane at the time. Because we were kind of into the Moody Blues.
Yeah.
And they did that song, Timothy Leary, which was all about mind expansion. So we were in the Astro Plane having shopped for groceries for the band house where we all lived together in Vancouver, BC, and rehearsed and built equipment together and stuff like that when I was a newbie in the band. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
75.
No, listen, it's pretty incredible. Look, and welcome to Story Behind the Song, and it's great to have you on and digging into the stories like that and just the times and how it was, the feeling of it all. I definitely want to dig into that. Just like you know, how those times, Vietnam War-ish times and political corruption times. And, you know, it's kind of harkens back to a lot of things that are happening these days, too. And so
I was going to say, nothing like today.
Yeah.
No comparisons whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, evil regimes trying to take over other countries were ours. But so it was a really, well, we are actually talking about a song from the first album, Crazy on You, right?
Yes. Yes, we are. We're going to go deep into Crazy on You, yeah. But we can get into it, of course, because such a great song from your first album, Dreamboat Annie. And like we were talking about, Magic Man was the first one that really hit me, but then Crazy on You is such a classic. It's hard to choose. It's really hard to choose, Nancy.
Well, in the time you just were speaking of, our days back in our politically fraught with all kinds of, the Vietnam War and everything else was happening. And the hippie movement of which we were part was also really anti-war and pro-love. And, you know, we had a big message to send. And again, we were very into a lot of the Moody Blues albums at the time because they were very mind expanded and they were very philosophic about the state of the world and the state of humanity, us as humans and our place in the world and part of history and all of that. You know, cool stuff that a lot of rock people used to write about more than they do probably today. I mean, it's a lot safer not to, obviously.
Sure.
Don't come out politically, you know, because then you'll get pigeonholed into somebody else's silo where everybody wants to be an enemy of everybody else right now. So on social media, there's so much headbutting and just like, it's just like arguments for the sake of arguments. And it's such a waste of time. But anyway.
But it really is. And you were talking about how artists were, not all, of course, never is that way, but were willing to put themselves out there and be authentic and speak their voice about the things they were seeing. And maybe those times, just because of all the things that are floating around in the ether, are going to come back. And there's going to be a resurgence of some of that authenticity.
Wow, I really like your idea. I think
it came from you.
Well, I think you might be really right about a reactionary, creative reactionary backlash, like a positive backlash against the stuff that's kind of being hurled at us in the culture right now, which is so unbelievably insane. You know, it makes our generation, the 60s, and the Vietnam War generation, because it's right on our own soil, it makes it look comparatively, this is probably more serious in a way because it's on our own shores, on our own soil going on inside our own country right now. So for the creatives to kind of push back against all of the fighting and social media and side-taking and one-upsmanship and all of the saber rattling that's going on in the social media culture, I think it's all just been really hyped up, you know, by the wrong people for the wrong reasons. And so I think, you know, for us to kind of hopefully get a more unanimous idea about who we are against the world as creative, artistic people who admire music and who have music in our lives to survive a lot of this stuff. Music is the great healer. So I think, you know,
it is.
It really is.
It really is. And it's, you can see some of the, you know, all those forces out there and a movement that is beginning to seemingly take hold because, like, you see social media, a lot of, you know, I have two kids too, and a lot of people are now starting to step away from their dependence upon it and beginning to realize that rather than putting it all out there to everybody, kind of staying more to your circle. And so that's why you see, you know, things like X/Twitter coming down in terms of popularity and significantly. And I also think, Nancy, and I'm curious to get your thoughts here, but also because of this increasingly digital age of ours where everybody's kind of is bombarded by all these messages all the time, it's stepping back into the beauty of being together, coming together in physical environments, to concerts, to festivals, to shared experiences.
You are preaching to the choir, my friend. It's really a true thing that you just said, because I've been saying it myself to my friends and family, especially over the holidays, where you see a coming together, so of social consciousness, like what we were lucky enough to grow up inside of with, you know, like the Beatles. It was a shared experience all at one time.
Yeah.
Everybody had to stand outside and wait in line to go buy the Sgt. Pepper album, you know, or something. Like we all, it was so important. And it wasn't swallowed up in all of the static of social media. So like when you see people unifying around, say, Taylor Swift, for instance, and dancing in theaters at her movie, you know, and they're having a shared experience. And she's, I've got to hand it to Taylor Swift. I mean, my favorite Taylor Swift music was her Pandemic album.
Yeah, well, they're great. I hear you on that.
But she's an incredible talent and just continues to be a force of nature and a force of culture for the better.
Yeah.
Really bringing people together. Music will do that. And, you know, a lot of it's young girls, but I think it brings a humanity. Her songwriting brings a great humanity and shared experience with what people go through. And that's why she's such a great songwriter. I think people can totally relate to what she's been through, what she goes through with romantic, you know, ties and changes. You know, she was a child star, so she's maybe, hopefully, going to be maybe one of the only child stars that ever gets out alive, you know, with sanity intact. But she seems to have such a great sense of humor around it all and knows how to just, you know, do it in her sleep. She's a natural, and probably because her mom is there for her, like she doesn't have greedy parents that are trying to milk the cash cow, you know. So she might actually be one of the only child stars that makes it. And I really pray that she does, because she's such a force in the culture right now.
When you see, like, getting to what you were talking about, just coming together, and all these shows were sold out shows, but yet so many people would come who couldn't get in and be together outside the stadium.
Yeah, they would still
party
somehow.
And then would look at Barbenheimer this summer, and there's a reason. Everybody, it got excited, but not just girls, young women, men, husbands, fathers, boys, you know, like everybody got together on this kind of stuff. But, you know, there's so, and what's so wonderful, and then I want to get into the song, but obviously this is a big year, it sounds like, for you, with you and your sister coming together, and I hear rumblings of new music that's going to be coming, and you're going to be touring this summer, and so it's a big year. It's
very exciting. You know, it's been way too long, and we have a song we've already played live a couple of times that called Roll the Dice that is working out well. And we've got a couple more in our pockets, and just put out a great new solo album called Another Door that we're doing one of those songs right. So far, we're doing only one, but I expect we'll do more than one of her songs and a couple of our new songs together, not to tax the audience's, you know, familiarity meter, but it's really good stuff, and it feels like heart music, and it might be really a good message to send to our very loyal and devoted fans over the years that we're still making new music and enjoying each other's creative, you know, presence. And we have fun on stage. So we had four shows. So we played a hockey game, and then we played, you know, New Year's Eve in Seattle.
That's awesome.
And we played a couple of casinos as warm-up gigs. And it just felt like wearing the most comfortable pair of shoes to be with my sister again. It was great.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
You know, what's so wonderful is that the authenticity really shined through, obviously, and that's why your music is so lasting. And so I guess first, before we dig into Crazy on You and the like going deep into the story of that, how does it feel to put something out in the world 50 years ago?
It feels so damn lucky. It really does, because for a lot of reasons, obviously, but the fact that people have stayed loyal and you know, it means something to them, the original Heart fans from the day. And now their kids also are learning about Heart, a lot of younger generation coming out to our shows. You know, the kids of Heart fans and new fans that kind of discovered us in the 80s era as well. So, I mean, when you do these dreams, we did these dreams, so there was like so many lights being lit, you know. Yeah. And it was like, wow, there's such a powerful thing about a great song that becomes the soundtrack to people's lives. And again, a healing force in your life. Songs get you through the hard stuff. So, but yeah, it's really lucky that, I mean, it's not an accident, because when we started out, we set our caps as creatives to purvey a poetic, kind of philosophic, romantic ethic in the actual music and the songs. That we're not just, you know, oh, you know, I'm chewing bubble gum, I'm talking about my boyfriend, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
And I think that makes those songs a little more less dated, for one thing, and just they kind of stick to your ribs eventually. And they don't, usually it's just the production value, like in the 80s, for instance, that can start to sound dated after a while. But the songs themselves are great songs. So you just reinterpret the production of them,
yeah,
you know, to update or whatever and bring it to the now.
Right, right.
This is now. So to quote a great song of Anne's. But yeah, so it's really a lucky yet carefully constructed lot of work that we set out to do. And I think we had the right idea because it still hangs around.
Yeah.
It's still part of the culture.
Well, and it's so many songs that are part of the culture. And yeah, it's, yeah, not just one or two, which is pretty incredible. But, you know, we talked about it a little bit of the times then.
Yeah.
For your first album, Dreamboat Annie, which came out in 1975. But let's go back a little bit to those times and just how Dreamboat Annie happened. And specifically, just telling the story of how, yeah, Crazy on You. Like, what was in your minds? What was the first? Do you recall when it first came to you, and was it a lyric that first came to you, or was it the music that first came to you? Just,
yeah,
take me back.
Oh, well, okay, well, let's see, where do I start? Well, I'd been threatening to join Heart for a couple of years, because me and Anne always played since I was really little in at least the family band, because we were all musical together, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, ukuleles, campfires, you know, lots of sing-alongs and singing in the car, you know, and stuff like that as a family. So we were good singers, harmony singers. My mom's a great piano player. So the whole musical family of me and Anne being great together, me more like the accompanist to her incredible voice. So I would try to play guitar like it was a whole band all by itself, where when she would sing. So we started out as, you know, little school-aged, you know, high school, junior high, all-girl bands, like girls from the choir. We'd have guitars and we'd, yeah, go sing at youth group, you know, church groups and stuff. And we just had a lot of humor and sarcasm and joy around the fact that it was the Beatles generation and we were huge Beatle people. So we kind of emulated the Beatles a lot and got the exuberance of the Beatles into our making little bands happen. So by the time I decided to, I'm 4 years younger than Anne, so she started with a real rock band before I was old enough to join. So I decided to take that time to go to university, mm-hmm, and get some like creative writing experience and do some reading and, you know, just become an intelligent, you know, creative mind, hopefully bring that back into this. There was an open invitation for me to join Anne's band for a couple of years. So by the time I did join her band, she was already the number one cabaret act in Vancouver, BC, with her band called White Heart.
Uh-huh.
And then they were resetting the band when I joined, and they named it Heart and made that logo that still exists today.
Okay.
It was handmade, you know.
Who made that? I'm just curious.
The guys in the band.
I think they did?
I think that they actually got a font that they found, and they made a big sign, and they painted it by hand. And they put it behind us in the cabarets where I joined and started learning how to play with a loud rock band instead of acoustic. And which, of course, I brought a lot of acoustic with me to Heart.
So part of the like that's such a signature element of your band.
Well, that's kind of what makes Heart pretty different from a lot of rock bands, because we're a heavy rock band who can also go acoustic. Not unlike Led Zeppelin, I might add, because that was one of our other huge, huge Muse influences and Muse, you know, as writers and as players. So, and another lucky thing, we got to grow up around with Led Zeppelin and Elton John and Joni Mitchell and Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, you know, and Neil Young on his own. But anyway, it was the time I was like trying to learn how to play and hear myself on a big stage, on a loud, not very big, but a loud stage. And, you know, sing background and play electric more and take double lead solos, you know, and there was so much beer. I mean, the beers were really good in Vancouver and Canada.
Yeah.
Almost everywhere except the United States, the beer's really good. It's really strong, but it's really good beer. And so I just remember those beer soaked days in the cabarets of Vancouver, BC. And we were the house band at a place called the Zodiac Room in a hotel in Vancouver. And we got a big following. They were already the number one. And I stepped in and we got a bigger following. And we started making the album because somebody had seen us, a producer, a local guy had seen us. So he worked at a studio nearby called Canbase Studio. And then we made demo tapes at the Canbase Studio and sent our demo tapes out to every major label and got turned down at least twice. So then a local label called Mushroom Records, like the Magic Mushroom, picked us up as like an indie, but you know, like an indie thing. And we made the album with Mike Flicker in Vancouver, BC at Canbase Studio, owned by a paint company, you know. We just had a sound studio.
That's rock and roll.
You know, it was so random, like how it all came together. But I was there and we wrote songs, and all of our songs on the first album were originals. Me and Ann were, you know, writing up Storm, you know, getting songs done. And Crazy on You was one of those, obviously, one of those early songs. Dreamboat Annie was the first one
we wrote. Beautiful song.
Turned into the title song.
Yeah.
And we were thinking of like the Beach Boys, kind of like, you know, like a little ship of dreams, you know, like, you know, just like going on a journey now and, you know, put your sail in the wind and take a little journey in a little ship of dreams, you know. That's the kind of like whimsical thing that we were going after with Dreamboat Annie, the song. So then we decided, okay, this is a concept album. So we'll have like a Dreamboat Annie, and then a reprise of Dreamboat Annie that's an instrumental with some string parts. So it's a recurring motif, you know, throughout the concept album of Dreamboat Annie. Mm-hmm. And so the way Crazy on You actually came about was because Anne is largely an incredible lyricist. And I was, at the time, we had the idea for a song like with a driving guitar part, like the Moody Blues song called Questions, you know, ding, 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 why do we never get an answer? There's that song that starts one of their albums.
Yeah.
We wanted an energy, like acoustic energy like that. We knew that much. And then I felt very sick with a terrible flu and a very high fever. And I was like, you know, hallucinating in my bed with like 104 temperature. And Anne comes bursting in the room. She goes, I got these lyrics. I'm like, what? And she had me.
Come back later, right? That's
what you're going to do. What are you talking about? I can barely understand a word you're saying. But she gave me the notebook, and I read the lyrics right then. And it was like, wow. that's everything about our, what's happening in the world today with Vietnam. And, you know, we may still have time. We might still get by. Every time you think about it, I want to cry. The bombs and the devil. The kids keep coming. No way to breathe easy. No time to be young. You know, so what else am I going to do except go crazy on you is like the chorus. And I was like, this is perfect. I don't need to fix one thing in here, you know. So it was, and as soon as I, you know, was recouped enough to play again, it was the A minor to F. And it was really, it came together really fast.
So she had the lyrics first. And then you brought the music to it. Is that
well? We knew that we knew we wanted that music.
Yeah,
that's the vibe of that music. So we'd already been experimenting with music in that energy.
Right.
So we had the groove already in mind. But she just came up with all these lyrics, and then it kind of slotted together really pretty easily with the guitar part, rhythm guitar, and then Roger Fisher, who was our player at, guitar player at the time, came up with the. Da, 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 which is iconic in itself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you walk into Guitar Center, like I've walked into Guitar Centers, and it's suddenly a bunch of people are going, da, 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 da.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, I'm here.
I bet.
I don't miss Guitar Center, I got to say. I mean, I won't go in there anymore. I like Guitar Center. I'm not dissing Guitar Center, but there's something about it.
Yeah.
When you walk in, it's like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Suddenly Barracuda is everywhere in the room. And
that's funny.
Crazy as you.
It's funny to hear. I don't know if it's funny to experience firsthand.
Well,
if you get it all the
very,
time.
It's kind of nerve-wracking because you're suddenly really self-conscious because it's known.
Yeah.
Just walked into a huge store.
And then they hand you the guitar and say, okay.
It's like, hey, play me a little tune.
Right, exactly.
Like, no, you already played it. It's okay, you already played it. Which is all the world's best problem, you know, to ever have, right?
Yeah.
You know, so.
but I get, look, I get it. But so you had this kind of this idea. She brought the lyrics to you when you were sweating profusely, but you immediately kind of got
it. My teeth were chattering, you know.
And you said that it came together really quickly at that point.
At that point, we had the lyrics. I mean, the lyrics are always the tougher part.
Yeah.
Of any song to do right, to do well, in my estimation, you know, getting good words means a lot. It's not that easy to come up with words that sing well and that sit well in a track, you know, and, you know, fit to the music. So a lot of times you write music first and then you got to try to fit the lyrics on top of those. And it's like a Rubik's Cube sort of sometimes, you know,
yeah.
You go, damn, I've painted myself into a, you know, a rhyming corner here because I can't find a word that rhymes with orange, you know.
Right, whatever. Right.
And so, you know, I guess that's what rhyming dictionaries are for. But I still have my original rhyming dictionary.
That's funny.
I
actually didn't even know about a rhyming dictionary.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can do it online, but I still have my book. You know, it's like a little paperback that's just shredded. It's falling apart. You have to kind of hold the pages on, you know.
That's cool.
It's just like you refer to cool ideas for near rhymes or perfect rhymes or how many syllables do you need that rhyme with that word? You know, you can look all of that stuff up and it's a good tool for sure.
So when you went into, okay, so you had this and it all kind of came together. And then when you went into the recording studio to do it, was it pretty faithful to how you had it immediately, you know, initially, or did it get a lot of work in the studio to perfect it way that we understand it to be today?
I don't think that song was ever a difficult song to pull out. Like pulling teeth, sometimes you have a group like Magic Man, for instance. We were like, we knew the words were great. We knew what key it would be in, what the melodies would be, but the groove itself was really evading us. We were kind of like, it's like, no, that sounds kind of like, I don't know, a little too, you know, hi, how are you, you know, and you know, not to be disrespectful, but it just didn't sound like rock.
Yeah.
So it sounded like a different cultural, you know, rhythm that it wasn't working. So we worked it, tried different stuff. There's like a million versions of what didn't work. Mm. And then one of us, or sort of unanimously, we tried dun dun stop, so that then you could put the chick in the stop.
Yeah.
And it became a cool groove suddenly. It's like, oh, we just needed to stop for a second. You know, give it a little extra edges.
Isn't it amazing how little decisions like that have this profound cultural impact, where again, Magic Man is so another true. One just lives on. Like, it just lives on. And it's because of those little decisions.
It's so interesting how true that is, because there's so much a connotation with different musical sounds. For instance, if you're searching in a keyboard, say, for a certain sound that you want to put a wallpaper behind another part, just something that kind of disappears in a track, like a glassy atmospheric sound, for instance, if you're looking for something like that and you're sampling and you're auditioning sounds, you go through different sounds and it's like, oh no, that's too 80s. Oh no, that's too Bowie. Oh, that's too ELO. Oh, that's too this, that's too that. And every single tonality has its own little compartment of the identity that it holds in the culture, like musical identity of its own character, its own imprint. And, oh, that's too dated. Oh, well, that's neutral. Maybe we could use that, because there's no connotation attached to it.
Yeah.
So it's harder, kind of harder and harder to find those sounds that, like, for instance, the Mellotron sound, which was the Moody Blues when they invented sort of the chamberlin at the beginning, mm-hmm. which became Mellotron. And nobody's using Mellotron anymore because it's so dated, but it connotates all of those sound times it was used in that era. And you can't really get away with using a Mellotron now. So it's an interesting thing about just like a do do chick.
Yeah.
It's just a moment, you know, in tonality that and rhythm that just fits, and it just it's kind of indelible there forever.
Once you had recorded Crazy on You, did you know that you had something special with that song?
Oh, absolutely. Like that song had so much to say. You know, it was relevant. But it was also sexy at the same time. So it talks about the political world we're from. And then it just says, oh, you know, I can't do all this. I might as well just go crazy on you, you know. And, which is finding an escape hatch with a romantic person, with someone you're just like, when all else fails, make love, you know, like kind of thing. And it's a great message. And I think it walks the line between too political and nicely romantic. So we knew that song was perfect. And it was really like, and the energy was so big. And so that's why I decided this should start the album, but I should be like in the band Yes, like Steve Howe in the band Yes would make, like almost like a classical acoustic introduction intro into the song.
Yeah.
So that's why I put, you know, I took a couple of days by myself in a room to find something in the same key that would fit as an introduction to Crazy on You, which now is called Silver Wheels. And I was totally trying to channel a Paul Simon instrumental, acoustic instrumental song early on that called Angie. And so it had the same shuffle beat and the same key in a similar shape as the Paul Simon song Angie has. But I made it my own, obviously. And now you see it all over Instagram, like heart bands are like, I could do this now. I could play this.
Well, it's pretty incredible. It's such an incredibly intricate intro. It is intricate. And I wish I could remotely come close to playing something like that. But again, that's one of those things. Like when you had the track, you were saying that you knew you had something immediately. You went back and as part of it, when you were, before you went in the studio, you went off on your own and created this introduction. Yeah. Was it another one of those things, Nancy, where you knew you had it once you
Yeah, once played. It came together.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of a flashy player. I mean, I still can be, but at the time I was really trying to prove it super hard. I was really, you know, trying to be, you know, as good as any guy, you know, and trying to prove it really hard. And so I thought, you know, I could do this great acoustic picking fingerstyle thing, but I can do it aggressively. So it's not folk-like. It's not like folk music. So it's got like this energy in it. That's what I loved about the Angie song that Paul Simon did. There's a great energy to it. And, you know, it just takes you on a little ride. But it took me 3 days, seriously, because I was like, no. You know, not that. But, oh, maybe this. And just do it over and over and over and over again. And then your fingers are really sore, because, you know, so you have to take a break. And, you know, but it came together. And now it's part of the moment that is Crazy on You. It's really good to have that be there.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the crowd goes crazy when they start hearing.
They see, they know it from the first note.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is so cool to me. Like,
isn't it wild that, okay, really? So it was intense. You go off on your own for 3 days, but look at that investment of time, that creative time.
That certainly was worthwhile. Yeah, it really was. And, you know, so many people make that their, like, I'm raising this bar so I could call myself a player if I could play that, you know, if I could play Silver Wheels. And a lot of people can now play Silver Wheels really well, which is amazing to me because it's not easy.
Yeah.
You know,
so let me ask you a strange question about that. When you, let's say you, when you went off for those 3 days because you wanted to create something like that, was that hard work in your mind, or was it just like, was it fun? Like, what is the headspace like when you have a task that you set for yourself to create like an intro? What's the, and you're this, you know, you're, oh, you were probably what, like 20 at the time?
Well, 20, maybe 21.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. I was doggedly determined to put myself on the map as a player individually from the group, so that I had a signature thing that I bring to the album as an introduction to this amazingly, you know, powerful song. I think I was really determined. Like, I knew it was always fun to play, and I love playing. There's no, you know, there's no real work involved in per se. It never feels like work for me to play guitar. I mean, almost ever. And then somebody says, let's do this again. I'm like, oh, okay, one more time. But then it gets better. You know, I do it again and it will get better. But I think I was like so military about it. Like we come from a military background. Our dad retired as a major. His dad was a four-star brigadier general. His brother was in the service. And so was our granddad, both our granddads. So, we had this ethic, this military, this dogged determination to make it, to be really good, you know, and to prove how good we were. And like, you know, Anne at that time as a singer too, you see her just vocal pyrotechnics like nobody's business, like no one ever did or still will probably ever do. But, you know, later on, like more recently, her vocals have become more soulful and a little less trying so hard to push it and prove it, you know, which I think is even a nicer, you know, like I hear some of those early, like Zeppelin songs too, with Robert Plant, like way up in the stratosphere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, wow, like that's impossible, you know, but Anne was doing the impossible like that. And I was trying to do the impossible with that introduction for Crazy on You, something that, you know, would be really hard for people to ever learn. Because, you know, like, almost on purpose.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
This
I love what you said about her voice too. Vocal pyrotechnics. I love that. That's a great way to put it.
And
so you were saying you're so determined at the time. Could you even fathom at the age of 20 or 21 that you would become this massive band? Was that the goal? And did you think it was possible?
No, it was absolutely the goal. And being such Beatle fans and having, you know, put ourselves through music school, basically learning every Beatle song and every song on the radio and writing songs and learning how to write songs better and learning how to play and becoming a better singer, Anne plays too. And she plays keyboards too. And I play keyboards too. But we've just tried to improve ourselves as hard and as fast as possible, because the idea was we were going to make it big, and we were determined and we were pretty sure. I mean, I felt like this is what I'm born to do. This is my destiny. I'm going to do this and it's going to work out.
Yeah.
And it did. It actually did, which is crazy, because now, at my ripe old level of experience here, I'm like realizing I have no other skills. Like, I mean, I'm sure I could fit in somewhere, if I was trying to do something like a normal job of some kind.
Yeah.
But I don't know what, I mean, I'm good at a lot of stuff. I'm a good cook. I'm good with animals. I could probably teach music, but I don't really read. I can, but I don't.
Yeah.
Don't go by reading music, so I wouldn't be able to teach reading music. So I don't know what else I could.
Well, we're fortunate that you had that drive to because it's so amazing too. It so many people have great talent, but they don't take the next step, and especially when they're really young and just kind of go for it because of all the pressures around to kind of conform to the rules of the game. And great art is born out of that kind of determination and belief, internal belief. It's kind of like Damn the Torpedoes. It's so much easier said than done. So
you couldn't say it better than that. I mean, it is a minefield, to walk. And a lot of really talented and younger folks that try to plow through that field and try to get to the other side don't, because for many reasons, obviously, because stuff falls through. All their big hopes are crushed. They keep trying, doesn't work. Then they feel too old and they have to have a family instead. Or they just aren't built for, emotionally built for success. Like, that's a big if right there. If you can take it, if you can handle all of the slings and arrows that come your way and still pull up your socks and march, is, basically what we've always done.
Yeah.
Pull up your socks. Stop walking on your socks. There's no crying in baseball.
No, there's no crying in baseball. No, listen, that's great. Thanks for through the journey of that. That's funny. That's such a great line.
That's the best line ever.
But just kind of wrapping that part of it up is that the music, for all the reasons we talked about, like your music, Heart's Music, that song, it does not feel dated. It continued. There's something very timeless about it, but it's how we started the conversation too. The lyrics themselves are so relevant to what's going on today, because, I really kind of think about young generations in particular that bombarded with all these things. And sometimes the best escape is to just go small and go crazy on each other, rather than focusing on with all the noise that's out there.
There's so much static all around.
Yeah.
But only social media. But, if you dare watch any news, but which we do just to, be informed. But, trying to find the real story out there is pretty tough now.
Yeah.
And but I agree with you, though, too, that I think that a lot of people are starting to tire of the whole social media. It's war games. It's like it's a lot of unnecessary drama, and life has way too much unnecessary drama as it is. Life is scary enough without a bunch of rabid dogs, trying to have street fights. Yeah, so I think music really holds a place now, again, starting to now again, much like how lucky we were to have music in that way in our day. But it's still a protective measure against all of the static and all of the noise and all of the misinformation and all of the, you know, fighting that's going on everywhere, all of the competitive, you know, ego trips that are going on out there in the social world.
There's a reason why people go through all the work to make it to festivals and concerts and all yes. that, because it's,
yeah.
I mean, look, I could go on and on. I don't want to take too much of your time, but it is true.
But I mean, you go to a festival, you got to drive there. You got to pay for gas. You got to find a way to pay for parking. You got to walk, you know, and you got to walk through muddy fields half the time. And, you know, it's not comfortable. There's no comfort zone to go even to an indoor arena show or a stadium show. You know, there's a lot that people do they have to go through to get there for that experience of sharing something that happens only once together.
Yeah.
Like that yeah. is a one-time only communal experience. You know, like I saw the Dead and Company's last show at the Oracle recently. And it was like, you know, I've always loved the Grateful Dead, and I've always been a fan, but not a super fan, like not a Deadhead, you know.
Right, right.
You are always there. And this was their absolutely final show, supposedly, with the original members mainly. And it was so good. They were so good. And I was like, Eureka, like now I get the Deadhead thing. There was so much tie-dye, that more tie-dye than I've ever seen in my entire, or will oh, ever see yeah, in my entire life. And a lot of kooky dancing, you know, hippie stuff.
Right.
Well, a few people going out on stretchers because they overdid it, you know, whatever, like usual.
Yeah, of course.
But the whole place, this massive stadium, was happy.
Yeah.
Everybody, there was no threat. There was no sense of danger. There was no negativity. And that's a case in point right there, what we're both, you know, talking about.
No question.
We could release this.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's no question about it. And
yeah.
Nancy, you're so talented. We haven't even touched upon a lot of the things that you've done. obviously, you've done the music for so many films, two great films, like Almost Famous, which is such a classic. Oh, but it's such a great, again, music, the story of music and the impact on people's lives. But I want to just go through like a lightning round to end the conversation. But thanks for the journey of going through Crazy on You, those times,
yeah,
and just the like your feelings about your own art, how your mindset through it all, which is fascinating. So I want to go. Well, first of all, just mention again that it's pretty amazing that you're now the band formed before Dreamboat Annie, obviously. So you've essentially reached the 50th anniversary of the formation of the band, and then Dreamboat Annie was 1973. So pretty soon it won't be long for the 50th anniversary of Crazy on You and all those great songs.
Yeah, the first
You have your new music that's going to be coming out with your sister. You're going to be touring with Def Leppard and Journey in the summertime.
Yeah.
And are you scoring any more films, or are there any other projects that are hot on the burner for you right now?
Well, I haven't been doing any scoring lately, but I hope to be after the world tour.
Yeah. But you're a little busy.
A little busy, you know, but I do have a home studio finally. But I've been working on some other music, some songwriting stuff with our longtime collaborator, Sue Ennis, that wrote a lot with us with Heart. And I've written a song called A Million Goodbyes that's a duet with Ben Gibbard from Death Cab for Cutie.
Yeah, of course.
And that's going to come out probably this next month. And then I've written a few other songs that are going to be Nancy songs, new music that I've done that looks like they're going to be downloadable at the merch booth during the shows. So
that's
like
cool.
If you buy a hoodie or a t-shirt, you get a free download.
That's cool.
Some new music that I've been working on. Just a few songs that are new bonus music. And pretty much, yeah, that's pretty much what I'm doing.
What would you say, and this is a tough one, but what would you say your favorite Heart song is?
It is a really tough one because you know, going, pouring through the catalog because of the tour coming up, I want to pull out some beautiful gems that are a little more deep cut fan, you know, fan favorite stuff. And there's all kinds of cool stuff. But I think as a signature heart song, Mistral Wind for me, it's the total epiphany of everything heart is, because it starts out very gentle acoustic. It tells a really kind of the story of Ulysses, basically, is really what it you take a journey on a ship that almost crashes into the rocks, and then you survive it, but you're a different person coming out the other end. You'll never be the same, you know, when you took that journey, like Ulysses. But the music itself starts the way the words start, and then it climbs into a big stormy sea, and you big rock song, huge epic sort of rock song. And then by the end of the song, and you're kind of drifting into a little safe harbor again, and you're back to the delicate acoustic moment again. So it kind of represents everything heart did well, all in one song, yeah, all in one 7-minute song.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song.
It's a good
okay,
one.
So what's on your playlist these days? Like, what are you listening to these days?
Oh gosh. Well, I like to work out. In my gym, you know, which I could just, I'm so lucky to have. And I listen to new music, new albums all the time when I'm in the gym. And like Dustin McKagan's album, Lighthouse, really good album. The Foo Fighters, great album. Angel Olsen, the big time, great album. It's a go-to, you know, I go back to that one. Yesterday I listened to Random Access Memory, Daft Punk.
Because I heard it long
and I forgot how amazing that album is.
Yeah.
You know, so I try to listen to new music. Boy Genius, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
They're individually great as well as together great.
Totally great.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, stuff like that. I listen to XMU in the car.
Yeah.
Because I like college radio. You know, I'm sort of always digging for what's coming up, you
right,
know.
Right. Right.
In the college. Age kind of demographic.
That's kind of my go-to too, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not listening for, yeah,
there's a lot of good stuff, you know, Courtney Barnett and just all kinds of great, you know, Mama, Bully, they play a lot of cool new women bands, you know, bands that have women. So I'm listening to new stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't get stuck in my ways.
Yeah, it's very cool. And then
Nancy,
last question for you. Who would you want to portray you in the inevitable biopic?
Elle Fanning.
Elle Fanning.
Yeah. She is an actress whose sister is Dakota Fanning.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And she's the younger of the two. And I just watched a series that she was nominated for, Golden Globe for, The Great, it's called. And it is such a romp. It's such a hysterical costume era drama from Catherine the Great. She is Catherine the Great. And she is insanely talented. And she can sing. So
there you go.
Big looking like they could play guitar, I guess.
We have to see the biopic. We have to see that.
Yeah, well, we're working on a new script now that the pandemic has slowed down.
Oh, so you're working on a biopic?
We're working on, it's actually a movie. It's not exactly a biographical. Yeah, there's probably going to be a script starting up here again.
Good for you. That's
along the way already, and we're still searching for the right writer.
That's exciting.
And director, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. Well, listen, Nancy, I really, really enjoyed it.
Me too.
We love the music. It's so great that you're going to be touring. Look at all the amazing things that you're doing, new music and all that, and listening to new music. And that's what it's all about, right?
That's right.
Well, it's mindset.
Yeah, and besides that, I have no other skills.
That was Nancy Wilson of Heart sharing the story behind the band's signature song, Crazy on You, which soon celebrates its 50th anniversary. I'm your host, Peter Chatti. Reach out to me at peter@deepcutsmedia.com with your feedback and ideas of which artists you would like me to interview next. For more of the story behind the song, make sure you like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and tell your friends. And also, make sure you're following the Consequence Podcast Network to keep up to date with all our series at consequence.net/consequence-podcast-network. And as always, thanks for listening to the story behind the song.